The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Rolene Mark standing in for Anthony Reich. Good morning, Rolene. How are you?
I'm literally standing in because, you know, high-heeled shoes.
Yes, exactly. And a soapbox to boot.
Always a soapbox. You know, I drag that thing around wherever I go, Howard.
Nothing wrong with that. All right, lots and lots of things to talk about today. Let's just talk about Herzog. He is the incoming president of, what is it, international Jewry? What is his position?
Okay, so we have in Israel, we have a prime minister who is the political head of the country and who is elected by the people. And then we have a figurehead for the country. That's our president.
So it's purely a figurehead.
He's a figurehead. Mm-hmm. He's somebody to represent us on the international stage. Mm-hmm. He's somebody who is essentially non-partisan or above the politics, and he has very, very limited political power. But he's there really as a head of state, to be the unifier of the country.
So he doesn't represent any political party. The fact that he came from the left or someone might come from the right, it doesn't matter. So when we say he's the president, it cuts across all parties and it cuts across the nation. He's there primarily to unify the country. Is that correct?
Exactly. That is correct. What was very interesting with our two former presidents is you had Reuven Rivlin, who also had an incredible political career and was very, very hawkish. He was seen as veering more to the right. And then preceding him, you had Shimon Peres, who was seen as more of a dove. And both men, you know, when they came into office, it was a concern, you know, how would they be as presidents, given their roles or given their political careers as prime minister and various other portfolios. Reuven Rivlin, his most notable position before president, was Speaker of the Knesset, and they both became incredible unifiers, incredible symbols of the diversity of Israel. We look to the outgoing president now, Reuven Rivlin, as this incredible grandfather of the nation, and yes, he's made one or two little blunders. During the pandemic, he had that Pesach Seder with members of his family. Mm-hmm. Didn't go down too well. But he also took time out to read the children of the nation and myself storybooks. I mean, how else would I have learned about Shmulik HaKippod, Shmulik the Hedgehog? But these are very much the symbols of and the representatives of Israel on the international stage. And before he steps down, in about 10 days, Reuven Rivlin will go to the United States for a farewell tour, and he will be feted there. He might even have the opportunity, we're waiting for confirmation, to address Congress. And Herzog coming in, he comes from an impeccable Zionist political line. His late father was also a president of Israel, Chaim Herzog. He was our representative to the United Nations, absolutely iconic. He tore up that resolution in 1975, equating Zionism with racism. His late grandfather was the first chief rabbi of Israel. His uncle was Abba Eben. Abba Eben from your neck of the woods, Howard, one of Israel's finest ambassadors and speakers on the international stage. And Herzog himself coming from the Labour Party and then heading up the Jewish Agency for Israel. A very, very important portfolio. Also slightly political and now elected by the Knesset, because the president is elected by the Knesset and not by the people of the country. Stepping in several days' time on the 7th of July, he will take up that portfolio.
One of the challenges that I think he might be facing is trying to bridge the gap between Israelis and American Jews. Over the last while, we've seen this chasm forming. Is he well positioned to do that?
Well, it's interesting because during the presidential run, we had two excellent candidates, incoming president-elect Herzog and Miriam Peretz. If you've ever had the opportunity to hear her speak or read her book, an extraordinary woman who lost both her sons in combat, and the way that she has handled her life has been simply extraordinary. And a lot of people wanted her to win. But I think if we look at the bigger picture, we do have issues with American Jewry that need to be healed, that where bridges need to be built. And I think that Herzog is the man. I think also, especially now as we see growing anti-Semitism around the world, our diaspora communities feeling extremely vulnerable and unsafe in many communities around the globe, he is the person who understands diaspora Jewry, your concerns, and how we can bridge these gap the best. Also, our brand new government, one of their big challenges is also going to have to be to appeal to American Jewry. And you know, I can hear many of our listeners saying, you know, why are the Americans so important? Well, because we need that important bipartisan support in the American government, because the size and because America is Israel's greatest ally. And these gaps need to be filled. Our Foreign Minister Yair Lapid has said one of his priorities is to try and improve the relationship between Israel and the Democratic Party, which he believes was neglected. And I think President-elect Herzog will play a big role in that as well.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see. I'm intrigued to see how this plays out and if he can, because I think part of the issue with American Jewry is American Jewry. I don't believe that it's necessarily an Israel problem. I do think that it's an American Jewry problem. Speaking of which, can we talk about the report as to the increase of online anti-Semitism?
Well, we have seen a shocking, shocking increase in online anti-Semitism, not just over the last month and a half or so because of the Operation Guardians of the Wall, although we've seen some rhetoric that I don't think you and I, in our many years of being active in social media, have ever seen anything quite like this. But I read a very interesting article from Emily Schrader. I know you have spoken to her, explaining how Jewish female activists have come under attack. And you know, it's not just that classic anti-Semitism. There's also a great deal of misogyny. And because we're a family radio station, I'm not even going to repeat some of the things that have been said there. You and I have been the recipients of death threats innumerable times. You know, we spoke about how Trump has been kicked off social media, but the Ayatollahs allowed free rein, and that's propagating more and more anti-Semitism. I mean, some of the images that I have been sent myself, images of Hitler saying, you know, it's a pity that he hasn't come to sort me out, and that it's only a matter of time, from the left and the right. So we've really seen this horrendous, horrendous escalation. And a lot of our young people are most active on Twitter. And I know a lot of people think, well, the young, they're apathetic. They're not involved. They are very, very much involved. But the level of abuse that is out there is astronomical.
I mean, my 16-year-old daughter received the most unbelievably offensive comments on one of her posts. It was just remarkable, absolutely remarkable, to see the vitriol and the hatred that that she faced simply for being Jewish. It was quite incredible. So yeah, indeed, that is a major problem, and it's one that's not going away. I believe also part of the problem is the unbalanced reporting. So you'll have an incident happening in Israel and everybody on social media is talking about it, but you'll have an attack on a marketplace yesterday where 60 people were allegedly killed and there is virtual silence in virtual reality. It just doesn't exist. It's like it didn't happen.
It's absolutely staggering. We're seeing that. That was Tigray in the north of Ethiopia yesterday. And what made this even worse is that soldiers prevented the wounded from the access to medical care. This is something that's taking place on the African continent. And I can speak from experience dealing with the South African press. Are we going to see major headlines about that in the media in South Africa? Absolutely not.
It's barely been reported in South Africa.
Are we going to see Trevor Noah and John Oliver and the Hadid sisters and Ellen Barkin and Susan Sarandon? Are we going to see them dedicating Instagram posts to that? And are we going to see marches in the street? Because this is not the first time that civilians have been attacked in Tigray. Yesterday, you and I spoke about the situation for Uyghur Muslims in China and just how appalling that is. Where are all the female voices? It's been termed a genocide because women are being forcibly sterilized. Where are all the women that were speaking about Me Too and have now co-opted issues in Israel to smack us with? Where are they speaking about that? It is Pride Month. It is Pride Month, and instead of looking at how the LGBTQ community is treated in the Gaza Strip, we've had the Chicago Dyke March in their promotional material with a keffiyeh and a gun, and in their other promotional material, an Israeli flag and an American flag satellite. I mean, I would hate to tell them, but you know, Chicago is in the United States. Maybe they need a geography lesson.
Yeah,
as
they
well.
Also are basically satellite at the moment, considering the crime wave. Mervyn says, "I'm not going to comment on the media not blocking anti-Semitism because you don't read it out." Mervyn, that is passive aggressive. That is passive aggressive. And I did just read it out, so I don't understand how that works.
We're having this discussion.
Raheem, I don't want to let you go before we talk about Gilad Shalit. You've got 90 seconds. Go.
Can we just wish Gilad Shalit, held in captivity for 5 years by Hamas, a massive, massive mazal tov. He got married in the Emek Hefer region in central Israel last night to the lovely Nitzan Shabbat. And this is 10 years after he was released. And can we just wish him a hearty, hearty mazal tov. And being a total girly girl, I loved her dress.
Well, there you have it. I have to tell you, I didn't even see her dress, but they got married. They were engaged for some time, weren't they? I think they got engaged in Australia, if I remember correctly.
Yes, they have been engaged for some time, and it's so heartwarming to see Gilad Shalit, you know, those images that we saw of him in captivity, a psychological warfare, the day of his release, so thin and so drawn, and today seeing his face full of love, full of joy, filled out a bit with his beautiful wife, and may they just have a lifetime of happiness.